Okay, so welcome everybody to we'll see what it is. But I'm just delighted to be here. For those of you who don't know me, my name is Diana Clark, and these are my dear friends, and we're just delighted to be kind of exploring this new way of looking at suttas together. And I'll talk a little bit more about that in a moment, but we'll let everybody else introduce themselves.
So welcome, welcome. My name's Ying, Ying Chen. Feeling delighted to see many of you who returned and also some new folks maybe. Yeah, so welcome. David.
Thank you. Yeah, I'll just add my welcome to those offered by Diana and Ying. Wonderful to be here with these three teaching colleagues. We love working together, and from time to time we come up with these kind of wild ideas. And every once in a while we join others to, or we invite others to join us as we explore sort of different ways of bringing the discourses into our minds, into our hearts, into our practice. So welcome all. Kim.
Great. So I'm Kim Allen, and I'm very happy to be here with the teaching team of the four of us. We've done a number of these together. I know some of you are joining us freshly, so maybe we'll give a little bit more background that we've done, I think, a dozen or so of these sutta explorations, but never quite in this format. So I clearly we're kind of evolving or devolving or somehow. But it's really nice to share the suttas. We all have a kind of a passion for the texts as a foundation for practice. And we've always felt that there's some way that they touch the heart directly. And so this is an opportunity maybe to bring that even more to life in some way. So the other wonderful task I get to do is say a little bit about what was on your registration forms. And we have people from multiple countries, as usual, 14 U.S. states, and actually quite a number of you are new to Sati courses. So that's maybe because we've been offering more courses recently. And so it's great to have new faces and new voices here. So you were asked a little question on the registration form about, you know, what your interest was in coming. And most of you said something to the effect of, I want to see the drama, you know, curious, excited, interested about seeing, you know, studying suttas in this way. We had some nice phrases like the integration of Dharma and art and a love of storytelling, these kinds of things. Some of you mentioned specifically wanting to learn the Dharma or learn the suttas, and I hope that that will be the case. We'll hear more about this when we get into the teaching, but this is quite likely the way that, possibly the way that the suttas were conveyed when they were an oral tradition in ancient India. One person said that they would have higher retention of the material due to learning it in a novel format. So we'll see about that too. That's maybe possible. And then there were some creative ones, like somebody said that they like Jane Austen. And the subtitle of this was, of course, Pride and Prejudice. And it might be a creative exploration to figure out the connection between what we're offering and Jane Austen's format. That could be a good comparative literature study. If there is any direct resemblance, it's a little bit fortuitous. But of course, the themes of Pride and Prejudice, you'll see, are very common throughout this Buddhist teaching that we're offering. So just to also set some expectations, we're not presenting an hour and a half of drama this morning. It's each segment that we're doing, the 3 days this week, we'll have a couple of dramatic readings as well as explanation of them. And you'll still have the opportunity to be in breakout groups and talk among yourselves about what you're learning. So this is still a class, but the format is novel. Many of you are on computers, it looks like, so that's good. That will be the best, I think, for visual. And so with that, I'll pass it on to Diana.
Great. Thank you, Kim. Thank you, Kim. So I'm just going to say a few words about what might you expect, or what can we, what we're kind of hoping that you'll get from this class, this course. And first I'll say, have fun. Have fun with us. We have been, when we've been preparing, oh my gosh, we've been laughing and kind of, I don't know, just, it's very funny. For us, we think it's funny. So it's, maybe it's funny that us trying to be actors or something like this. But I will say that part of the joy out of this is that this started when the four of us during the pandemic, we met outside at a park and went for a hike. And we were talking about, okay, what are some things that we might do? And this came up and we thought it was so ridiculous. We would never do it. But then we thought like, oh, wait, no. Okay, let's try to make it happen. And so here we are. So I like this idea that it's, you know, started with us going for a meeting for a, we had a picnic after we went for a hike and talked about some of these ideas. So hopefully the, some of our playfulness will come across. And then just as Kim was saying, for us to recognize that there is more than one way to engage with the text. And it can be really fruitful to look up individual Pali words and look at the etymology of those words and see where else they show up in the suttas. But there's also another way, right? There's so many different ways. And so this is, we're going to be offering what we think might be in a different way. And then also to recognize, so there's four of us and there's four characters in this sutta for primary characters. And we might recognize that maybe there's a little bit of each of these characters in all of us, right? These are maybe caricatures, we might even say, but maybe we can relate a little bit to each of these characters. And so maybe we can relate to this sentiment a little bit of what's being put forth, if not exactly the story. And I'll also mention that this is Digha Nikaya 3, that is the third discourses of the long discourses of the Buddha. So the Digha Nikaya, the long discourses, has a very particular flavor compared to the Majjhima Nikaya. Some of you might be in the Majjhima Nikaya course that Sati Center is also offering. And one of the characteristics is drama. That there's like some narrative and there's characters and some drama that is happening. And we might say that there's, you know, scholars have thought about this, that maybe part of the reason why there's some drama is just because of the role of storytelling, that there was storytelling, just like today, like humans love stories. And so in the same way. And so, but in particular in the Digha Nikaya, some of the stories are related to giving like Buddhism as a brand new tradition to give it some credibility, to say, yes, we are a tradition and we do have followers and we are distinct from the other traditions. So that tends to be an emphasis of what we see in the Digha Nikaya. And you'll see that here in what we're about to portray. And part of the way it shows up is the Buddhists have to show that they are superior, or that at least, yeah, that they're superior, like they offer something unique. So we'll see this kind of getting played out. And one way that this shows up is with debates. And you'll see there's a little bit of a debate here, and maybe we'll talk about that. So maybe the last thing that I'll say here is to recognize that in all these different settings, whether it's a dramatic thing that we're doing here, or whether it's, you know, some very particular thing that we're looking at one particular word or something, one thing that is consistent in all these different suttas and all the different portrayals of them is that the Buddha, I just appreciate this so much, he wants people to find their way to awakening. He wants to help beings become liberated. And so all of his teachings always come back to this, always come back to this, So maybe that's something that we can keep in mind as we're exploring this together. It's like, how does this support people finding their way towards awakening? And we'll be talking a bit more about these types of things as the course proceeds. But I just wanted to introduce some of the themes, and my colleagues will flesh them out some more. And maybe one last thing that I'll say here too is a theme that kind of shows up here is teachers and students. How do they treat each other? What is the role of the teacher? How does the student find a teacher? What does it mean to be a student? Some of these things. So, okay. So maybe with that as a brief introduction, I'll turn it over to Kim.
Okay, great. So to help us settle in for this, we will do something that is not done at any live drama performances, which is that we're going to meditate first. So wouldn't that be nice, though, if when we went to the theater, there was a little meditation before it started? So if everyone could find a posture for meditation, just settle in to a comfortable posture. And if you're comfortable doing so, you can close your eyes at this point. And just feel the body sitting. Maybe taking a couple of long, slow, deep breaths. And letting the exhale completely soften the body. Settling into the sense of a stable base that you're sitting on. So feeling the place where you're sitting. Finding a good balance on your chair or cushion. And feeling the way the straightness of the spine supports an alertness. When the body softens into the sitting posture, it almost releases upward, liberated from the tensions of being on the computer. Softening the eyes and the eye sockets. The muscles of the face, like the forehead, the jaw. Down into the shoulders. Letting the shoulder blades slide down the back. Softening the arms, the hands. Down through the torso. Feeling the three-dimensionality of the rib cage, front, back, sides, the heart space in the middle. Releasing the diaphragm. And the muscles in the belly and the low back. And down through the hip joints, and into the legs and feet. Just inviting ease throughout this body. And then also in the mind, inviting ease and alertness as we just rest with our experience as it is, just allowing any emotions or thoughts to be there. Touching into the open mind that can hold any experience arising and passing away. And resting. And in the last few minutes of this meditation, you're invited to an imaginative journey. Imagine yourself in ancient India. It's a time of kind of a feudal society, people living in towns and also out in the country. Some people lived in the forest. It's the Iron Age. Technology is simple. Life is simple, centered on a community. People are well aware of different social classes, markers of who a person is. But internally, human life is much the same. It's filled with the wish to be happy, to build a life in the world, family, children, living in a community. Sense of spirituality. Love, frustration, happiness, tragedy, uncertainty, the past uncertainty of human life, and all the reactivity we have to that, trying to hold on, trying to secure a place. And from time to time, religious teachers would wander through, teach ideas of how to live well. And we're about to witness one of these teachings.
Thank you, Kim. Yeah, very nice to get a bit settled in our practice as we prepare to open ourselves to the teachings. Typically, when we approach the discourses in these study and practice classes through the Sati Center, and really pretty generally in the insight meditation scene, we tend to approach the suttas as texts that hold the teachings. And our perspective, our approach is a little different in this class. It's complementary, we think. And that is to see the suttas, particularly those, as Diana mentioned, of the Digha Nikaya, as resulting from inspired human creative acts. That provide us with great stories and great theater if we listen in the right way. And this perspective, this different perspective, suggests that the suttas can not only guide us into and through the teachings, but also by way of these stories and this theater, the drama, inspire our practice, inspire our engagement with the teachings, and bring creativity and imagination forward in our practice in a way that we think can really be very supportive of practice. So following Kim's wonderful guided, imagine yourselves on a moonlit evening, perhaps in a forest glen on the outskirts of a village or a town or a city. A group of people gathered to hear stories about the Buddha. And we're among this group. We're members of this group. As we sit and listen in this forest glen, we come to know the teachings as they're presented in story, in the voices of different characters, different human predilections, prejudices, views, strengths, and weaknesses emerge in different characters. And in these characters and in their interactions, in the various story arcs that are expertly woven together by a great storyteller, powerful core teachings of our tradition emerge in a way that affects both our hearts and our minds. Wise speech comes forward, especially how wise speech is embodied in the Buddha and acted out in a community and social context. The idea, the teaching of the true Brahman, which we'll explore quite a bit, the idea of what constitutes a true religious practice accessible to everyone, regardless of birth, caste, class, religious tradition. The not-self teaching, particularly the ways we get attached to accomplishments and use them to establish, define, and protect our precious social identities. And last but hardly least, the special teaching of the Buddhas, the liberative potential of direct experience in deep meditation, perhaps, of impermanence and the unreliability of clinging to phenomena as self. So in Digha Nikaya 3 and in other suttas in the Digha Nikaya, these sorts of teachings emerge from interactions of a really fascinating set of characters. So let's meet these characters, shall we? There's a narrator, and when I don this hat, hopefully not dislodging my top knot, I become the narrator. The narrator provides a sense of framing, a sense of background, gives some cues to off-scene action, and generally just provides that kind of supportive role. When I remove this classy hat and I don instead this robe, I'll play briefly today the role of a student, a colleague of Ambattha's, who has no interest in engaging with the Buddha, seeing the kind of thrashing in debate that the Buddha, kindly, with an open heart, with the teachings in front of his mind, is giving to my friend Ambattha. I'm going to stay out of the way. Pokarasati.
Namaste, namaste. So my name is Pokarasati. Good to meet you all. As you can see, I am one of the most senior and respected Brahmins here in Ukata. Well, even though everyone in Ukata knows me, I'm aware that you're coming from a different time, different place, so you probably don't know me much. So I want to just say a few words about myself. As a Brahmin, I've learned the three Vedas ever since I was very young, and I remembered the verses by heart. And I want to show you the place I live just for a moment, for you to get a sense of who I am and where we are. So let's see if I can make this happen. So this is the place I live. It's a place that King Pasenadi offered to us, the king of Kosala. And it's a place full of grass, hay, living creatures, humans, and it's truly a heavenly place. And that's offered to me as a royal gift. It's a truly blessed place that I live. One last thing I want to say is that the commentaries had a long description of the attractiveness of my personality and the color of my appearance. And it says that my body was the color of a white lotus, like a silver petal in heaven. Well, it's truly delightful to meet you all.
Thank you. Thank you, dear teacher. Yes, I listen to everything that you say, and I do whatever you tell me to do. And I'm so glad that we are Brahmins, because Brahmins are the best.
And I'm the Buddha. I am the fully self-awakened one. And my only role in the world is to teach the Dharma. Before my awakening, I came from the Sakyan clan, the Sakyan family, which is a family of aristocrats. We are a different class than the Brahmins. And you will hear people address me as Master Gotama. So that is referring to me, the Buddha. Now, Ambata, he thinks he's someone special, but I've seen a lot of hotshot young Brahmins like him, and he does not faze me at all.
So I'm donning the hat of the narrator.
But David, do we want to wait just a second?
I am. I'm going to create some stage patter because of a technical requirement that I overlooked earlier. And as we prepare for a first dramatic or dramatized reading from Digha Nikaya 3, we want to set the stage appropriately. And Kim is going to help us do that.
Presented by the Sati Center.
It worked.
Yay! Wee, wee, wee. If I knew how to whistle, I'd whistle. Thank you, Kim.
So, let us begin. Evam me sutam, thus have I heard. At one time the Buddha was wandering in the land of the Kosalans, together with a large sangha of 500 monastics, when he arrived at the village of the Kosalan Brahmins called Ijanangala. He stayed in a forest nearby. At the same time, the Brahmin Pokarasati was living in Ukata, a property given to him by King Pasenadi of Kosala. This property was teeming with living creatures full of hay, wood, water, and grain, a royal gift of the highest quality. Pokarasati said,
"It seems the recluse Gotama, a Sakyan gone forth from Sakyan family, has arrived at Ijanangala and is staying in a forest nearby. He has this good reputation that blessed one is perfected, a fully awakened Buddha, accomplished in knowledge and conduct, holy, knower of the world, supreme guide for those who wish to train, teacher of gods and humans, awakened, blessed. He has realized with his own insight this world, and he makes it known to others. He teaches the Dharma that's good in the beginning, good in the middle, good in the end. He reveals a spiritual practice that's full and pure. It's good to see such perfected ones."
Now at this time, Pokarasati had a student named Ambata. Ambata was one who recited and remembered the sacred verses and had mastered the three Vedas. He knew philology and grammar, was well-versed in cosmology and the marks of a great man, and he had been authorized as a master of the three Vedas by his teacher.
"Dear Ambata, the recluse Gotama Asakyan gone forth from Sakyan family has arrived at Ijanangala and is staying in a forest nearby. He has this good reputation that the blessed one is perfected, a fully awakened Buddha, accomplished in knowledge and conduct, it's good to see such perfected ones. Dear Ambata, go to the recluse Gotama and find out whether or not he lives up to his reputation. Through you, I shall learn about Master Gotama.
But, sir, how shall I find out whether or not the recluse Gotama lives up to his reputation?
Oh, dear Ambata, the 32 marks, the 32 marks of a great man have been handed down in our sacred verses. A great man who possesses this has only two possible destinies, no other. If he stays at home, he becomes a king, a wheel-turning monarch, a just and a principled king. But if he goes forth from the lay life to homelessness, he becomes a perfected one, a fully awakened Buddha who draws back the veil from the world. But, dear Ambata, I am the one who gives the sacred verses, and you are the one who receives them.
Yes, sir.
And thus ends our first reading, a very brief one just to get started. I remove my hat. I've changed my name back to David. Now I'm here just in a teaching role. And would just point out that even in this very short scene, several key themes emerge that will become very important in various of the story arcs that characterize this sutta. We see Brahmins and samanas, or Brahmas and wandering teachers and practitioners of other wisdom traditions. We see in the larger context this a reference to mainstream religious trends and emerging alternative views on such things as ritual, on such things as caste and class, and certainly on central question of human existence, of suffering and freedom. We see students and teachers, clearly between Ambata and Pokarasati, but we also see this emerging role of the Buddha as a teacher to all. We see the very important theme of caste emerging along with various caste symbols. And this will become a central point of the debate, although, as one of my teaching colleagues pointed out earlier, I think Diana, everything that emerges in the debate is a pretext, on for the Buddha anyway, for advancing the teachings, sharing the teachings with his audience, his audiences, and by extension with us. Among the caste symbols that emerges, there's quite an interesting one, the chariot. It's only mentioned briefly, but Ambata arrives in a special chariot. And the chariot is a symbol of aristocrats and of warrior class, and in a sense makes a claim on the Buddha's territory. And as we'll see in the action, the Buddha doesn't accept that Ambata has actually earned that sort of privilege among those who practice in a religious path. The chariot, some of you may know, is also turns up in the suttas as a symbol for the self. We learn that the self is no more substantial than a chariot, which is just a combination of parts that we call a chariot when we see it as a chariot, but it's just wood and wheels and things like that. Ambata, we'll learn in just a moment, shows up with a lot of self, a lot of attitude, you might say. We'll look to you, Ambata, to provide that tude. A lot of attitude. A lot of attachment to these accomplishments and to the rituals that he's learned at the hands of his teacher. And there, too, we'll see that the Buddha sets him straight about how important those sorts of accomplishments really are in his view. And I'll just mention before passing the word back, kind of opening it up for some early questions, that we hear this, we get this trope of the marks of a great man, the 32 marks of a great man. And I would just note in passing that this is a Brahmin conceit, something that concerned Brahmins and turns up in other literature. But it signals that we're going to enter a field of debate in which the Buddha plays with Brahmins' argumentative, rhetorical techniques, and in other ways shifts the ground underneath the feet of Ambatta by arguing in the Brahmins' language of debate. And we'll see that that has specific purposes in pulling the rug out from under Ambatta as the action proceeds. And about the 32 marks, it's just useful to mention here that I think we take this to mean that Pokarasati is essentially saying to Ambatta, go see the Buddha. When you see him, you'll know that he's the real deal. He's a fully enlightened being. And there's an implication that once you've recognized this, you acknowledge it with appropriate behavior in the presence of a Buddha. And we'll see, too, that Ambatta doesn't get this, misses this, and in a sense, that is the opening to the debate that we'll get to in a second dramatized reading in just a moment. Finally, just a quick note. Some of the themes, you may already feel this already, some of the themes that this sutta addresses, caste in particular, may bring up challenging feelings in practitioners. And this will be evident particularly in readings tomorrow. And we just want to note that we recognize that there are challenges in meeting some of this material. There could be awkwardness or discomfort around them. And yet we invite you to join us in this, as in many other ways, in developing skillful and meaningful relationships with these texts, even with some of the challenges that they pose for our interpretation, but also maybe for some of our contemporary sentiments about these issues. So let me hand it back to Kim.
Great. Thank you, David. So now is an opportunity. We'll just pause for a chance for you to ask any questions that you might have at this point about story, how it's opening, the characters, any of the themes that have been mentioned so far. Yeah, I can see Carlotta's hand.
Hello, and thank you for this opportunity. So far, so good. The question I have is for the character played by Ying, what are those? I mean, I was not quite sure about those 32 marks that he mentioned. Those that have taught you. So those are marks that the Brahmins had, and they were taught to their disciples. It's a series of rules, a series of behaviors, or how does it work? What was it? I don't know if I'm explaining myself. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I think we understood a little. Yeah, so in the Brahmin tradition, it is focused or have a kind of understanding that one way to recognize that one is a great being is through this 32 marks, physicality of the 32 marks. And we will see this in the later part of the sutta. And that's their belief, that's their understanding, and they are taught through the lineage. So they kind of memorize this 32 marks, and then they look for those kind of appearances, the features in the individual. And then they teach the students like Ambatta to remember this. And when they go look for if a person is a great man, they send this, in this particular sutta, they send Ambatta to go look for that in Buddha. Does that make sense?
Yes, it makes sense. Thank you. Yeah. Thanks.
And maybe I'll just add, so here, just to give you an idea, what are some of these 32 marks? like little webbed fingers, 40 teeth. ankles are in a, like an antelope, I think. And, you know, there's these odd physical things. So if somebody had these, you could easily see a number of them, but you can't see all of them. Oh. You need a Buddha to help you see all 32. And we'll see that getting played out in the next class. So, yeah.
So those are all physical marks.
Exactly. So the Brahmins are concerned about how they look, the appearances.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
And then we'll see, right? This is a difference between the Brahmins and the Buddhists.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Carlotta.
Leanne, your hand is up.
So just another thing on the 32 marks is the earlobes as well, that you always see the Buddha statues.
Yeah, those are the long earlobes, yeah.
You know, an interesting thing is all Buddhas have long ears, but that's not one of the 32 marks. Fascinating. And I don't know why. Oh, scholars love to talk about this stuff. I don't know why, but that is an indicator of a Buddha. However, one of the 32 marks is kind of like this thing on the head and having this other thing on their head. Those are two of the marks.
Thank you.
Liz.
What do you make of this 32 marks in the context of the times and what you know about the culture?
Maybe I'll say it's very curious. and maybe I'll say that there is some within the 32 marks, some of them you can't have both at the same time. For example, like one is like your wingspan has to equal your height, but it also says that another one is that your hands are below your knees, long enough to be below your knees. So those, it's impossible to have both of those. So it's clearly not something that's well thought out. And I have seen where somebody tried to see like, okay, could this have been the result of, you know, like some birth defects that had happened through the ages that kind of got, attributed to some greatness or something like this. You know, I don't know if it's true, but I think for me, and my colleagues can speak, for me, it's just this emphasis of what they look like and this kind of weird. Modern day, we think it's weird. I probably was weird back then, too, honestly.
Yeah, I'm wondering if there's any chance the Buddha was gently poking fun at the Brahmins. Or maybe not so gently. I don't know.
I would, to that, and just moving forward, poking fun, the Buddha liked to, as we have through the text, a sense of the Buddha playing with and playing upon Brahmanical conceptions of religious practice. And maybe the playing on, Liz, is something like the 32 parts of the body. In other words, a teaching that takes the same number, but convinces us or teaches us that in understanding body as body and establishing mindfulness in body, for example, that we are to not be attached to it. That physical appearance is not as important as other aspects of practice. And so for sure there's a contrast and a playing with that is significant.
It may also be that we are attributing our very literal Western minds to these and trying to figure out, you know, what would that look like exactly? And what's intended is maybe something a little bit more mythological, a little bit more also emotional, like having just an effect that somebody has in when they are awakened. So I don't know how you relate that to specific marks, although there is a sutta that relates the specific marks to like things that happened in the Buddha's past lives and how he acquired certain qualities. But we might, you know, we might just relax a little bit from taking them so literally.
Thank you. Yes.
Okay. Sorry. Kim, do you want, there was a question in the chat. Do you want to?
There was. I see Wayne's hand, but let me just quickly say there's this question in the chat about is the narrator Ananda? And yes, that would be the assumption in this case, since he narrates many, if not all, of the suttas.
You can always tell Ananda by his hat.
Yeah, he has a great hat. Yeah, thanks. Wayne, and that'll be the last one.
Is the reference to the Buddha, is that only to the historical Buddha, or is that a term that was used for other wise people at that time?
Ah, okay. So in this tradition, there would be just one Buddha at a time anyway. So there are in other suttas references to earlier Buddhas, but they were, you know, long ago. And so in this teaching, yes, the Buddha refers only specifically to Gautama, what we now call Gautama.
And then also there are other suttas where they kind of like take some of these descriptions of the Buddha and say, and the Brahmins are like this, and the Brahmins are always a little bit, not quite as great as the Buddha.
So we continue now, mise-en-scene, as they say, that is in the middle of this same scene. I'm donning my hat and I've changed my name. So again, I'm the narrator, or Ananda. It feels a little special to speak as Ananda, actually. I realize it's a heavier hat than I first thought. I chose something light and straw, but thanks for pointing that out. It feels more responsible. Now we pass on to Ambata going to see the Buddha. Ambata got up from his seat and bowed and respectfully circled his teacher Pokarasati, keeping him to his right. He mounted a chariot and together with several other students set out for the forest near Anchanangala. He went by horse-drawn carriage as far as the terrain allowed, and then he descended and entered the monastery on foot. And at that time, there were several monastics walking mindfully in the open air there, and Ambata went up to those monastics and said,
"Sirs, where is Master Gautama? For we have come to see him."
The monastics thought, "This Ambata, he's from a well-known family, and he's a student of the well-known Brahmin teacher Pokarasati. The Buddha won't mind having a discussion with such gentlemen." The monastic said, "Ambata, that's his dwelling over there, with the door closed. Approach it quietly. Don't hurry. Go onto the porch and clear your throat and knock using the latch, and the Buddha will open the door." So Ambata approached the Buddha's dwelling and knocked using the latch. The Buddha opened the door. Ambata and the other students entered the dwelling. The other students exchanged greetings with the Buddha, and when the greetings and polite conversation were over, these students sat down to one side. But while the Buddha was sitting, Ambata spoke some words while walking and while remaining standing.
"Ambata, is this how you hold a discussion with elderly and senior Brahmins? Walking or standing while they are sitting?"
"No, Master Gautama, for it is proper for one Brahmin to converse with another Brahmin while both are walking, standing, sitting, or lying down. But as to those shavelings, fake recluses, riffraff, black spawn from the feet of Brahma, I converse with them as I do with you, Master Gautama."
"But Ambata, you must have come here with some purpose. You should focus on that. You have not finished your training. Your conceit of being trained is due to nothing but inexperience."
When the Buddha said this, Ambata became angry and upset with the Buddha because of being described as untrained. He badmouthed the Buddha.
"Recluse Gautama bears me ill will. Master Gautama, the Sakyan clan, they are rude, harsh, touchy, and argumentative. Riffraff they are, and riffraff they remain. They don't honor, respect, revere, worship, or venerate Brahmins. It is neither proper nor appropriate that the Sakyans, riffraff that they are, don't honor, respect, and venerate Brahmins."
And this is how Ambata denigrated the Sakyans with the word riffraff for the first time.
"But Ambata, how have the Sakyans wronged you?"
"This one time, Master Gautama, I went to Kapilavati on some business for my teacher, the Brahmin Pokarasati. I approached the Sakyans in their meeting hall. And now at that time, several Sakyans were sitting on high seats, poking each other with their fingers, giggling and playing together. In fact, they even presumed to giggle at me and didn't invite me to a seat. It is neither proper nor appropriate that the Sakyans, riffraff that they are, don't honor, respect, and venerate Brahmins.
And this is how Ambatta denigrated the Sakyans with the word riffraff for the second time.
Even a little quail, Ambatta, speaks as she likes in her own nest. Kapilavatu is the Sakyan's own place. Ambatta, it is not worthy to lose your temper over such a small thing.
Master Gotama, there are these four castes, Brahmins, aristocrats, merchants, and workers. Three of these castes, the aristocrats, merchants, and workers, are subservient to Brahmins. It is neither proper nor appropriate that the Sakyans, riffraff that they are, don't honor, respect, and venerate Brahmins.
And this is how the student Ambatta denigrated the Sakyans with the word riffraff for the third time.
So now we just ended this second scene. And so just sit here, kind of reflect a little bit and probably get a sense of how human this is, right? And I want to just do a little reflection on this little piece where a few pieces and nuggets that came out for us when we were exploring this piece of reading. And the first one has to do with protocols of different cultures and different communities. And so some of you probably have experienced this when you go to a different country, different culture, you don't even know how to enter the door for this community, right? And here, the Brahmin Ambatta shows up in the Buddha's community, Sangha, and he didn't know what to do to really meet up with the Buddha. So the monastics had to tell him to go up at the door, clear the throat, and knock, and then the Buddha will come get you. Yeah, so there is this kind of a protocol exchange that's going on. And then when Ambatta went in, he saw the Buddha, and all of a sudden his old grudge came up. So he forgot all about what he was supposed to be here about. You know, I was supposed to look at the 32 marks and see if this is a great being. But he forgot all about it. And he showed up and he saw the Buddha, one of the Sakyans. Now here, all the pride and the prejudice shows up. You know, the big self came up. And so he ended up with calling the Sakyans and the Buddha riffraffs three times, just based on the past experience, a little grudge. And one little background to this, in fact, the Sakyans, as a Sakyan Republic, they actually did not have any Brahmins. So when Ambatta showed up in Sakyan Republic previously, you know, he's new to that place, that culture, but he was expecting everybody else to somehow respect the Brahmin. They didn't even know Brahmin existed. And he, so he showed up, and then all of a sudden he got very mad because of how the Sakyans responded to him. And then with that, he projected that out when he saw the Buddha. We can all see this in ourselves from time to time, right? You know, we go to a different place that we're not familiar with, but we carry a lot of our expectations and who we are, and to project that onto where they are. And so from that, I wanted to just expand out a little bit to share with you some of the overarching themes of the Sutta, maybe to give you a little bit of orientation. So I'm going to share screen for now. Let's see if I can do this. Are you able to see Ampata's? Yeah, okay, so this is a slideshow. I'm gonna show you a little bit of what's happening in this sutta overall. So we mentioned that we have a few main characters, the Buddha, Pokarasati, who's both a Brahmin teacher, and also at the end, he became a student of the Buddha, and then the Brahmin, a student, Ambata. And the scenes actually goes around in terms of the conversations that happened between the three main characters. The first one you saw, you heard, and then saw that Pokarasati asked the Ambata to go and check out the Buddha, mainly by checking out whether he had 32 marks of the great being. So Ambata shows up at the Buddha's place. And then there is all this back and forth conversation that he had with the Buddha. But Buddha goes through this conversation first by meeting where Ambata is at, by speaking kind of his language. David mentioned this also, you know, the Brahmins, the clans, the castes. But then at some point, when he feels there is some readiness, that big sense of self, pride, prejudices kind of calm down a little, then the Buddha had, with a sleight of hand, began to talk about what is a true Brahmin, and that it's through the gradual training. So that's the third thing. And the fourth thing is that Ambata takes this exchange back to Pokarasati, where Pokarasati felt like they got attacked by the Buddha, so he kicked Ambata. And then this exchange evoked the Pokarasati to go check out the Buddha for himself. And he saw the marks and offered a meal. The last scene is the climax of this sutta, which is the Buddha taught a progressive step-by-step training to Pokarasati, where Pokarasati opened the Dharma eye and become the Buddha's disciple. So those are the main themes of the sutta. And I want to just also say a few words about the themes. There are a couple of kind of contrasting themes that are happening. We mentioned this already a little bit by our co-teachers. Brahman focused quite a lot on external characteristics, appearances, caste, clans, ancestry, but the Buddha, on the contrary, focused a lot more on the internal qualities of our being. And the Brahmins say a lot about purity, but their focus of the purity is in the lineage, kind of, you know, what they feel is in the blood. But the Buddha's teaching around the purity is around knowledge and conduct in our heart and mind. And the last theme, contrasting theme, is this point that Diana made about the teacher and the students. You can see the teacher and the student relationship of the Brahmins are based on lineage, caste, and the protocols.
But the teacher and the student relationship is based on inspired faith, the cultivation, and the gradual training. And so those are some of the themes that I want to maybe just to seed it in for today. And the last one I want to point out is the parallel of the major themes in our modern days. You know, even though we don't say so much about caste and clans anymore, but the major themes around caste and clans also show up in our modern day life. Classes, ethnic groups, and we just got a little more sophisticated, right? I got much more fine, refined kind of a grouping and characteristics. But we can see so many conflicts and injustice, inequality, divisions continue to play out of this kind of a social construct today. So this teaching on the gradual training of one's and heart and mind really has a timelessness to it. And so I'm going to end this piece of teaching now and to turn it over to
Ananda. No,
Ananda.
No, my hat's off.
David.
Yeah, thank you, Ying, for laying this out. It's a complex web of narrative lines. It's really masterful the way it's told. The storyteller is a wonderful... a wonderful creator. And the story, such a great vehicle for these teachings. So we'd like to divide up into breakout rooms. And what we would ask you to talk about 10 minutes is just sort of free form, this theme of respectful approach, of protocol, and you know, how it strikes you in the sutta, in our reading of the sutta. And possibly what it's like for you now. In other words, we have conventions of respectful approach too. And so you might just sort of explore a little bit, again, kind of freestyle, maybe each one taking a turn to say something brief about how these things come up in their practice and how it sounds in this ancient text, the formality, the protocol for meeting. So enjoy one another's company, and we'll see you back here in 10 minutes.
Oops.
Hey, glad you're back.
Crash. Sorry about that.
No problem.
Oh, that's good. That happened.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
Actually, what happened was my battery ran out.
And oh,
I didn't get a warning. Usually it warns me, so I was not paying attention. I didn't have my computer plugged in, so I could get it across the room easily. So I'll have it plugged in the other classes.
There we go.
Yeah.
Oh, somebody turned on the recording.
Disrespect. I'm very sorry that the thumbs up keeps appearing on my screen. I'm trying to stop it and I can't get it to stop.
Listen, I love it. Having that.
It feels like we're doing good or something.
You know, I'll apologize for that.
Yeah, we don't mind. Thumbs up is fine.
Yes.
Catherine's giving us a thumbs up. Thank you. So now we'd like to open it up. We'd love to hear from you guys. How was that? This kind of like the conversation in the small groups. Did you have some new ideas or talking about this idea of etiquette and protocol and maybe going into new places? So maybe if there's, you want to share a little bit, if there were some aha moments, or maybe it was reassuring to know like thousands of years ago they've been talking about the same thing that we have to do with today, or maybe there was a little bit of tenderness around this too. So I'd like to open this up. And Catherine, I see that you have your hand up. Nope, she's sorry. Okay. We could put your hand down for you if you'd like. Yes, okay, there we go. I just lowered your hand. I think that's the power that we have as a co-host. But does anybody else? Yes, Nancy.
Oh, hi, everyone. Thank you, teachers. We spent in our group, we were talking about how to show respect for teachers. And we had a teacher in our group. I won't speak for him. Maybe he'll say something going back to school and how the middle school students might, how that interaction works. And then we had also a professor in our group and talked about how his expectations of how students would treat him were based on the way he, as a student, was trained to teach, treat teachers. So things change over generations. And I was sharing how in Japanese tea practice, it's codified how when students come into the practice space, how they enter. And everybody carries a small folded fan. So the fan is never opened, but you sit on the floor and place the fan in front of you to say the fan is like a marker of your space. So you're basically saying I'm entering gently and I'm just taking up this little bit of space. I'm not taking up the whole room. So I'm just here in my small space. And then you greet only the teacher first. And you say the teacher's name and a greeting, good morning, good afternoon, whatever. And then you say, like, please, you know, indulge me, teach me, help me. It's one expression that encompasses all these things. And then you greet everybody else in the same way. You know, everyone else, you know, good morning, please be there for me. And then when you leave, you do the same thing in the reverse order. You greet the, or not in the reverse order, but when you would say goodbye to the teacher and bow with the teacher, putting your fan in front of you, and say, I'm sorry for leaving before you're leaving. It's rude of me. And then you do the same thing with the students. You turn to everybody else and say, you know, I'm so sorry to leave before you're leaving. It's rude of me to do that. And I really love this recognition of the teacher's, you know, offering. And I miss that a little bit in our meditation spaces. So I thought it was beautiful how everyone in our group had a little bit to say about showing respect for teachers. I'll stop there. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Nancy. Right. This idea of protocol entering and leaving really plays out in so many different cultures in so many different ways. But yeah, thank you. Thank you, Nancy. Wayne.
For me, this thing of protocol and it just makes me think of how it's so wonderful. It having spelled out protocols and behaviors can just ease interactions. And even, you know, I think of, you know, we were talking a little bit about Japan and tea ceremony. And years ago, I lived in Japan, and it just, on a certain level, there's just a harmony that doesn't exist. But I bet if you live in those cultures and you get to know the protocols, there's little ways of tweaking people. So it's fascinating for me. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Wayne. Jerry.
I want to summarize correctly, but there was some momentum in our small group. I don't know if it was total, it may have been, that two or three settings, well, two settings was the medical profession and academia, a hierarchical structure and the etiquette following that was some of us sort of didn't have the best experience about that. So just to play the other side, that and we didn't come up with this line, but, you know, respect can be given, but it then really needs to be earned. We didn't really talk about, but I hearing it, I mean, because I've been to Japan and the orderliness of it, and you love bowing and you love being sort of part of all of that. But it's not totally complete or done well in the American model as far as I'm concerned. It depends how much integrity and ego is involved in the person who supposedly deserves your respect.
Fantastic. Thank you, Jerry. Thank you for highlighting that. I'm looking to some of my esteemed colleagues here, if you guys want to add something. I'll trust that you'll like unmute yourself if you want to say something or something like this. Okay. So, Will.
Muted right when you said that, Diana. I think Jerry mentioned among several points there, he mentioned at least implicitly how the gestures, the bowing, that they do reveal or can reveal an underlying place in the mind of confidence in the teacher, perhaps, right? Having recognized that this teacher has some wisdom to impart, and also of pushing the self, this is what you said, Jerry, kind of letting the self and its agenda recede a little bit. And that's there in the bow. So just want to point out that it's not these protocols, they have a basis of teaching, and that is in this sutta, that the Buddha knows that, Bhokarasati knows that, Ambatta is going to get schooled in it as we go forward.
Well,
yeah, I spent a sabbatical year among Tibetans in America, at the Karmapa's Monastery in New York, and with another group of them in Columbus, Ohio. And it was just amazing at the monastery where, you know, when you went to the teacher, to the abbot, you were expected to prostrate yourself, you know, to kneel, you know, to prostrate completely at their feet. And that was just so uncomfortable for me. But also there was, you know, the difference in the seating, like the abbot had a higher desk and then the tulkus had these other little desks, you know, and we were just flat on the ground. It's just amazing how that, you know, that culture was there, and figuring out how to deal with it and all was amazing.
Thank you, Will. Yeah, right. The kind of the Western, and I'll say American. Maybe I shouldn't speak for all the Western world. I don't know so much, but we do like our individuality, and we do like, you know, I don't know, this sense of not so much hierarchy. Of course we have hierarchy, but we rub up against it a little bit more maybe than we see in other cultures. Maybe a last comment or something before we close for today?
Yeah, there, Diana, there are a couple of comments in the chat. So April had a comment that the protocol reminds me that communication is 85% nonverbal and how that has not changed in 2,500 years. Yep, that's right. Yeah.
And then Carol Ann says she likes the hairdos, which, yeah. Thank you.
Oh, wait, and Diana, great horseback riding. Thank you.
And the mustache and the beard. You know, we have magics nowadays with the technology.
Yeah, it was fun.
Yeah.
Oh, Diana said Aristo cat, pampered feline, yes.
And yes, all the characters are male. There's this is typical as you read the suttas in general, but not all. But in this story, there's only one tiny appearance by a female, as mentioned. No speaking lines. So we get to do the... as is common in Shakespeare, the cross gender or race.
Okay, so maybe to wrap this up, but David, did you want to say something? No? Okay, so to wrap this up, we are reading from Bhikkhu Sujatu's translation of Digha Nikaya 3. That's on Sutta Central, suttacentral.net. If you want to look at it, you don't have to, but we've modified it a little bit. We've removed some parts, but we are pretty close following this translation and this story. So if you'd like to go to, maybe one of my colleagues can put it in the chat box, the suttacentral.net, and then navigate your way to Digha Nikaya 3. We have gone all the way through, it's called 2.3, something like riffraff for the third time. And I'll just have to say, I love this word riffraff. This kind of Bhikkhu Sujatu, he translates it. Bhikkhu Bodhi uses the word like menial, calls them, they're like these menial people, but I don't know, riffraff just sounds more fun. So we look forward to seeing you just day after tomorrow. We'll kind of continue this drama, and maybe it's helpful if you've read some, and if you haven't, that's okay too. And I don't know, looking at Kim, David, and Ying, would you guys like to say some last things here?
We can just say that we'll have, we did today, we'll have two readings per session, and they're a little bit longer in the upcoming ones.
Yeah, I just invite you, as you read, maybe you play the character for yourselves and see how that feels to you. Because when I got into Pukkarasati, I was like, oh, and this might be the mindset this guy has. So have fun.
I like being kind of the little bratty kid too. That's kind of fun. So maybe we can all unmute and just say goodbye in this kind of unruly, chaotic way. So thank you. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Thank you, everybody. Thank you.
So wonderful.
Thank you.
Wonderful.
Thank you. Thank you.
Congratulations.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bravo.
Till Wednesday.
Thank you.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Sorry to leave early.
Bye. Bye.
Enjoy.